3:30 p.m., September 1st. One three-person party entered the Rio Grande National Forest in Hinsdale County, Colorado. They consisted of Trevor Nyson, 37 years old, and Matilda Nyson, 33 years old, a married couple, and Benny Nyson, 8 years old, their only son. 5:31 p.m., Trevor and Matilda, highly distraught, encountered a Forest Service ranger to report their son missing. They could offer no details beyond "we turned around and he was gone." Matilda experienced a panic attack shortly thereafter and had to be treated on site with 20 milligrams of benzodiazepine. 5:33 p.m., the U.S. Department of Interior, Bureau of Uncategorized, was contacted. 5:46 p.m., a CH-47 Chinook helicopter landed 13 miles southeast of Lake City, Colorado. Trevor and an impaired Matilda were presented to DOIBO agents for interrogation. 5:47 p.m., based on the information presented, DOIBO agents confirmed cryptic contact. And that's where I come in. Did you know that Hinsdale, Colorado is the most isolated place in the lower 48? There are fewer roads per capita and longer distances between them than any other place. Have you ever wondered how people felt upon discovering that monsters were real? The British Museum assumed in 1799 that the platypus specimen before them was an obvious joke. Nordic seafarers feared the terrible kraken, leaving us to laugh at their primordial beliefs before considering the subsequent modern discovery of the colossal squid. None of this mattered to Trevor, who kept chewing on his hair, or Matilda, who was staring placidly at some nearby leaves. We've established that last contact with Benny was at 37.887 degrees north latitude and 107.214 degrees west longitude at 3:33 p.m. What more can you tell me about the departure? I asked crisply. Who are you? Matilda responded in an eerie sort of way. Well, that's not important right now, I shot back. I need to know the circumstances surrounding your son's departure. Trevor looked at me with bloodshot eyes. Departure? You keep saying that word. And how do you know so many specifics? His delayed speech and increased breathing indicated the early warning signs of shock. I regarded him stoically. The sun will set at 7:29 p.m. tonight. Overnight temperatures could drop as low as 59 degrees, which presents a potentially extreme danger to an exposed 8-year-old boy, and the public is unaware of the wildlife that has been documented in the Rio Grande National Forest. Each minute spent conversing about mundane nonsense is a minute of daylight wasted. Now tell me, did your son have any food? Trevor stared back in broken defeat, his eyes rimmed with tears. Just gummy bears. I grabbed for my radio. Get the chopper ready to fly now. Matilda spun her head toward me as I prepared to run. Who are you? Call me Lisa, I shot back. Now get out of my way. The chopper landed me as close to the coordinates as was humanly possible. I had to jump the last 6 feet straight onto the ground. The crew flew away immediately afterward. We couldn't afford the risk of scaring it off. Besides, I didn't need them hanging around. All necessary equipment had been packed ahead of time. I found the family's trail almost instantly. There was a path of broken twigs, scattered dirt, and even a discarded trail mix wrapper. I followed the marks cautiously, scanning every inch, and it didn't take me long to find it. An unnatural rise in the grass had snaked its way toward the path that I'd been traversing. If I hadn't been looking for it explicitly, well, I might have stepped right on it. I listened. The birds were quiet. No animals were stirring. Even the wind was holding itself at bay. I tried to silence my own breathing, but my elevated heart rate prohibited such an endeavor. I looked across the rolling landscape, toward the setting sun. It really was beautiful. Root beer floats were inspired by Colorado sunsets. I thought of this fact and worked to calm myself. It had a moderate effect. I reached slowly into my pocket, immensely thankful that I had packed everything I would need. I extracted said equipment, then looked at my own trembling hand. Gummy bears, only red ones, for the love of God, and definitely no greens. I tossed a handful onto the artificial rise in the grass. For a moment, nothing happened. Then the rise coiled around the candy, closing in like a snake and retracted. I didn't realize how frozen I had become until my head swam from a lack of oxygen. Then I sprang into action, moving my legs to follow the retreating rise in the ground. It disappeared into a copse of trees, then vanished from sight. I stared at the plants before me. No, not plants. At least not all of them. Broken fur rose in vertical lines along the edges of the trees. The brownish hue blended well with the bark. But I wasn't fooled. I stared up at the point where the fur stopped. It towered at least 7 feet above the ground, much higher than my 5'2" frame. I listened, and it breathed. Look, I offered shakily, pulling out a fistful of red gummy bears. There's plenty more here. I dropped them from my trembling hands onto the ground at my feet. And there was a snort. Then a large head emerged from the shadows. It was covered in thick, soft brown fur. Its two eyes, both 5 inches across, were jet black. Two tiny triangular ears sat atop its skull. There was no visible nose, and its razor-sharp canines would have presented an imposing threat if it weren't for the fact that they weren't misaligned in a massive, crooked underbite. Then it reached out a massive paw, clearly focused on my gummy bears. Whoa, I shouted, trying to look more intimidating than I felt. I stepped protectively over the candy. He snatched his paw back like I'd burned it. His eyes glistened as his lower lip began to tremble and drool. No, I yelled, pressing my advantage. Give me the boy. I stepped forward, causing him to flinch and raise his paws in a protective stance. It was almost funny. This bipedal monster was defending itself from something 1/10 its size. But to him, I suppose the term monster would be entirely relative. Give him to me, I screamed again, and he scurried into the bushes. Cautiously, I followed. He hadn't gone far. I could see his brown fur trembling in the dark. I leaned in. Benny Nyson, 8 years old, lay sleeping in the fetal position. A furry arm rested on top of him. I slowly reached for the bag of gummy bears. More slowly still, I raised them up in front of me. I pointed to the boy, and he understood. Benny woke up as the monster handed him to me. He began to panic. Shh, I offered as I completed the solemn exchange. I grabbed Benny tight as the giant paws rolled him into my arms. He looked around wildly. I quickly grabbed a bottle of water, opened it, and practically forced it down his throat. After a moment of panic, he began to drink like a baby finding its bottle. A few feet away, I heard the distinct sounds of a monster devouring candy. Benny finished the water, rolled out of my arms, and looked up at me. Who are you? He asked incredulously. For the first time, I smiled. Lisa McMurray of Doibo. You know, you're just like your mother. He looked at me in confusion. Are you an angel? No, I'm not at all. I work for the U.S. government. He seemed to understand. I search for cryptids, I elaborated. The what you would call monsters. After spending nearly all of human history hiding in the shadows, they've run out of places to go. Cryptids are terrified of humans, and rightly so they've been relegated to the status of legend. Unfortunately, their natural habitat is essentially eradicated. Their only hope of survival is within the government's environmental niche replication program, which is basically a classified government zoo. We're currently maintaining breeding programs for several wild monsters, the one that you found for us. Here, I pointed to the grunts coming from the bushes. This one loves your gummy bears. It's why I took you from your parents. He looked in confusion at the enormous fuzzy brown rear end poking out of the leaves. Is he dangerous? For the first time I laughed. Oh, no, He's essentially a giant puppy hamster. He's strong enough to rip a truck apart, though, but doesn't understand how to hurt things. That's why it's so dangerous for him to be around humans, who specialize in hurting. The slurping, smacking noise that came from the shadows began to slow its pace. I placed Benny on the ground. He remained in a sitting position, grabbing his head as though in confusion. So there's a secret government plot to capture monsters? Cryptids, I corrected. And yes, the one you just met is eating red gummy bears that have been prepared with a heavy sedative. He should be ready any minute now. And right on cue, there was a loud thump. Benny and I looked up to find that monster had already collapsed, just feet in front of us, and was now snoring quietly. The overwhelming shock of the situation was keeping Benny subdued. Why would you tell me all this? He asked. I smiled sadly at him. Because the water you just drank was laced as well. You'll be out in less than a minute, and you won't remember a single thing about what we discussed when you're reunited with your parents. I think he was trying to give me an angry look, but it was just as impossible with his eyelids fluttering so much. His eyes lolled at once, twice, three times, before finally coming to a rest on his shoulder. I gently grabbed him, then helped him to lie on the ground. He pushed me away at first, but eventually settled on sucking his thumb instead. I stood up and looked down at the two sleeping creatures. Mission accomplished. I whipped out my radio. I needed an extraction team ASAP. The primary target has been found near the coordinates of deposit. Equip the chopper to carry one small mid-class cryptid and alert Cheyenne Mountain Complex that we have a package for delivery. This is important. I'll need one large bag of red gummy bears. I looked down at the boy. He had snuggled up to the monster and was now acting as the little spoon, or as the teddy bear, depending on your point of view. I sighed, then spoke into the radio once more. Tell Cheyenne that we'd better make it two large bags of gummy bears. I signed off and stepped out of the shadows. It was 7:29 p.m., and the sun was saying goodnight. It really was beautiful, I decided. Like all the world was a root beer float. To be perfectly frank, I hated talking to Greg. My particular line of work was pleasant enough to exempt me from much face-to-face time with my immediate supervisor. Unfortunately, of course, some contact is inevitable. So, Greg sighed, easing his girth into the seat behind him. Why are we having this meeting? I dropped my slender frame into the opposite chair. You called me in to have a meeting, Greg. He blinked, then sighed in disappointment. You picked up a previously undocumented cryptid last week, which was sent to Cheyenne Mountain. Why was there an undocumented subject in your area? I tried to be condescending. Well, because if we had known where it was, then it wouldn't have been previously undocumented. All wild subjects have to be undocumented before we can discover them. He looked at me with a mixture of confusion and disgust. I realized that finding these subjects can be frightening, Lisa, but that's no excuse to let it affect your work. And if you can't deal with the rigors of this job, I'll find someone who can. Everyone else in your position is at least 5'8 and 160 pounds. My blood began to boil, but I learned long ago not to show any emotion in front of Greg. I forced a smile. I can assure you that I wasn't afraid. If you'll read the reviews from the extraction team and the medical report of the missing boy who I found, everyone gave me glowing reviews. Greg slowly took off his glasses before leaning forward in his chair. Lisa, I feel that you're often a challenge to my authority. I had learned to keep my mouth shut in these moments, but I'm sure my face was crimson. Greg then sighed. The subject that you picked up last week, all 867 kilograms of it, has been residing in the Cheyenne Mountains Environmental Niche Replication Program. It's several hundred acres of Colorado wilderness that's cleverly blockaded from any civilian entry. I nodded. Thank you for explaining that, Greg, but I was the lead consultant in designing this particular ENRP. Greg scowled. We've just got new orders from Washington, he explained gruffly. Here he tossed a stack of papers across the desk at me. Doibo needs to clear out this ENRP of all undocumented subjects. I stared at him in confusion. Clear out? Where will they go? Greg shrugged. Last week's subject has chromatically desirable optic receptors. I think that's the phrase they used. My jaw dropped. People like his eye color? He stared back at me in contemplation. When ground into a powder, it's apparently almost 3% less expensive than the leading black food coloring. I couldn't believe it. I nearly leapt out of my chair. You're going to kill it and take out his eyes? Why? Greg sighed deeply. Because the federal government's official position is that it doesn't exist, Lisa. Well, of course he exists, I spat. Greg shook his head. The official position is that there's no concrete evidence one way or the other, so there cannot be a policy that recognizes the existence of the subjects contained within the ENRP at Cheyenne Mountain. Therefore, Doibo has been instructed to terminate all subjects therein. I closed my eyes and pulled several of my hairs out. If your emotional condition prevents you from being able to complete your task, Lisa, there are stronger people who are capable. I controlled my breathing, and it wasn't easy. I'm absolutely fine, Greg, but you see, that order to dispose of something inherently implies that it exists. He blinked several times. The official position is that they do not. I looked at him blankly. Never mind. If they don't exist, why not simply release him back into the wild? Why are you going to kill him? Greg gazed at me stoically. They're not going to kill him, he said matter-of-factly. You are. I stared back at him, jaw slack now. Well, that wraps things up here, he shot in a chipper voice. I stood up to walk away, completely shell-shocked and disgusted. You know, they really screwed up the name of our department, he said, mostly to himself as I walked out the door. I turned back to see him brooding and grave. They call it the Department of Interior, but it only covers the outside stuff. I had been airlifted to Cheyenne Mountain in a daze. By the time we had landed, though, my resolve had returned. Though Greg had come with us in the helicopter, I knew that he was outranked once we landed on the ground. I'm not killing that cryptid, I exclaimed to a mustachioed man at the gate. I could tell that he was in charge because everyone around him seemed to be afraid of him. He looked down at me. Okay. I sputtered. Yeah, right. So, is that it then? Sure. The only reason you were requested is because they wanted the subject to be euthanized humanely. He then turned away from me to stare at the cobalt Colorado sky. I felt betrayed by how beautiful the firmament was in the moment. I wondered if the same immortal hand in distant deeps and skies had truly wrought both the hunter and the prey. It'll be a lot easier without any concern, the man continued, his hands clasped behind his back. A 7mm Winchester ballistic silver tip to the thigh could cause death via hemorrhaging within 24 hours. It is far less risky than the tranquilizer they had suggested you use before termination. Frankly, there's no telling how vicious that wild beast could get while my men are putting themselves at risk. 24 hours to die? That's torture. You don't have to do that. He's not dangerous, I nearly shrieked. Don't worry. He won't be a threat if everyone remains in the Jeep. Frankly, I'm glad to hear that you'll be staying out of harm's way. I don't think you realize what you'd be getting into with this monster. You better stay with Greg where it's safe. My world spun. I grabbed my head in my hands and walked away from the group. I focused on the crisp, alpine air. I took in the 50-mile view of wilderness, an expanse that was all at once both vast beyond comprehension yet exempt from the passage of time. I thought about why I took this job in the first place. Then I returned to the people in charge. I'll do it, I responded meekly. Give me the tranquilizer gun and the rifle. I blinked away a rogue tear that I was determined to not let them see. But I'll need a bag of red gummy bears to do things right, I said. I bounced back and forth as the Jeep drove even further into the wilderness of the Cheyenne Mountain ENRP. The rifle slid from side to side in my lap. Did George love Lenny? Mrs. Neese asked as she walked the rows of my seventh grade class. He shot Lenny in the head. Most people would declare themselves unable to do that to a person they loved, she said, and she stopped pacing. And for reasons I'll never understand, she chose to look directly at me. But I have to ask most people a very specific question, she continued. If choosing not to kill someone is a result of your own discomfort, doesn't that mean you love yourself more than you love anyone else? Here, she leaned in towards me and seemed to tune everyone else out. If your definition of love isn't completely sacrificing your own comfort, then how would you define it? My hands were too numb to tremble as I filled the bolt-action rifle with its deadly contents. I loaded the chamber with a decisive snap, then returned it to my lap. I joined Obu because I love the unknown parts of the world. Fear is power, but only to a certain few. And extracting fear is nothing different from extracting human potential. But sometimes the task of being human requires us to build impossible hope from nothing more than broken pieces. I am being forced to kill something that I love because I love it. That much of my humanity at least remains intact. I turned away from the rest of the people in the Jeep so that I didn't have to hide my tears. The vehicle plunged onward, unabated, into the hidden forest, with the futile goal of finding something more monstrous than what was already riding in it. I thought about turning the rifle on everyone else in the Jeep. Given the advantage of surprise, I'm pretty sure I could have taken the three of them out pretty quickly. After that, though, the only realistic option seemed to be running headlong into the forest, living like the cryptids we worked so hard to hide, never to be seen again by the world's deadliest animal. I stared down at the gun in my lap. It bounced harmlessly from side to side, looking docile and tame. I had 19 bullets to do the job and 13 tranquilizer darts, because the true hunter is more concerned with killing than it is with humanity, and I was way too much of a coward to shoot these assholes. Too much of a coward not to kill an innocent creature. The Jeep came to a sudden stop, slamming my face against the headrest in front of me. No one acknowledged my grunt of pain. Now that is one big pile of shit, the mustachioed man said. He turned his head around to face me. You're up, McMurray. I'm told that you Doibo folks love this shit. So do your thing. He finished, flicking his head towards a watermelon-sized pile of fecal matter on the ground. It was only when they slammed the car door behind me that I realized I would be alone. Wait, how do I get back? I called out. It's about a 2-mile southwest hike back to the edge of the ENRP, the man shouted as the Jeep spun around. We'll have Greg waiting for you. If he said anything else, it was lost in the rumble of the receding engine. I was alone. It was an improvement, to be honest, and I didn't even mind hiking the 2 miles back. But I knew Greg would be pissed at having to wait for me, and every minute that ticked by would be another strike against me. I pocketed the tranquilizer gun, shouldered the rifle, and plunged into the forest to kill an innocent monster. I had never understood how anybody could relate to a killer. I thought about this as I noticed a large swath of broken twigs and branches. There was always a clear line between right and wrong during my childhood. I reflected on this as I snuck behind a tree and stared into the shadow of a perfectly clouded corner of foliage. Being a good girl was the loftiest goal for me. Honesty would always trump deceit. I wondered about this while pulling the bag of red gummy bears from my pocket. Well, you know what they say about well-behaved women. I threw the gummy bears toward the trunk of the nearby tree. They bounced among its roots and lodged themselves in place. I waited. It took several minutes, and then the shadow moved. I heard its voice cautiously, and then a large brown furry mass emerged slowly from the leaves. His enormous paw reached toward the ground, flopped about, then snapped shut like a bear trap. The arm then disappeared once again into the shadows, where I saw an ephemeral hint of the snack going into the silhouette of his open mouth. He screamed in excitement. I reached a trembling hand into my pocket and closed my fingers on the cool metal of the tranquilizer gun. The cryptid then burst from the shadows. His black round eyes were blazing with excitement. The row of crooked canines that made up his enormous underbite was coated in a thick sheen of drool that ran down the corner of his mouth and drenched most of his chin. I pulled the tranquilizer gun out of my pocket and pointed it forward. All pretenses of hiding now gone, he bent over and presented his brown, furry boulder of an ass to me as he gnawed hungrily at the tree roots. With an enormous grunt and a deafening crack, a sudden burst of sunlight blinded me. Heart racing, I dove behind the nearest tree. If my gasping breaths didn't give away my position, I was sure that the jackhammer in my heart would do so post-haste. But when I peeked my head around the corner, I realized that I would remain unnoticed. The cryptid had been unable to reach the gummy bears lodged in the tree roots, so he had decided to move them aside. He grabbed them in his hand and pulled, and had tossed the whole damn tree aside. The sudden absence of a leafy canopy is what had caused the burst of sunlight, and the cryptid didn't spare me a glance. He didn't seem to have any grasp of how strong he was, and was apparently unfazed, as if he just moved a troublesome leaf. He was sitting on his rear end, knees straight and legs directly out in front of him, munching noisily with his mouth wide open. A piece of candy flew out of his face and landed in his belly fur, causing him to bend his head down and closely examine his navel. He moved in genuine confusion, causing the ground to rumble slightly, held it in front of his face with joy, then called out in triumph. He then happily popped the furry candy into his mouth, and he chewed it very loudly. I didn't know why the world had gotten blurry until I wiped the tear from my face, and that's when I made up my mind. "Hey," I screamed at him, waving the gummy bears right above my head. "Are you hungry for more mass-produced obesity tablets?" He snapped his head toward my direction, mesmerized by the candy. It never dawned on him to look at my gun. He clearly had no idea what it was. I then pocketed the tranquilizer. Then the cryptid arose, all 7 feet of him, and stalked toward me, eyes fixated on the prize in my hands. "All right," I breathed nervously. "Let's throw caution to the wind and get you out of here. You can be discreet, can't you?" He then walked into a young pine tree, instantly reducing it to splinters. "Great," I responded, continuing to walk steadily away from him. "Just great. Now, I designed this ENRP, so I know all its weaknesses. This preserve is designed to be a barrier from the forest, so that's the area that gets the most monitoring. We'll walk back toward the main compound and sneak you out there. Nobody will expect such a bold move. The closer we are to danger, the further we'll be from harm." He continued to advance on me, staring only at the candy in my hand. "And of course, you can't understand a damn word I'm saying. I can confess anything I want to you. It doesn't matter. The only important thing is that you follow me on a 2-mile jaunt through these woods." I took a deep breath, then turned toward the southwest and started running headlong into the forest. "So, what they say, in case you're wondering," I offered as I continued to run from the wilderness monster now chasing me through the woods, "is that we rarely make history." The whipping of the branches against my face, chest, and legs was enough to mute the voice in my head. I'm glad for that. I was sick of hearing, "So you know this is crazy, right?" on a continual mental loop. The frustrated cryptid chased behind me in a kind of lumbering power walk, though I didn't turn around to look. I knew that a wide swath of splintered trees and terrified squirrels surely lay in his wake. He shouted every time I dared to believe that he might be quieting down. Yep, this was totally batshit crazy. I knew this ENRP well enough and had spent sufficient time outdoors to realize that we were getting close to the main compound. But even then, caught off guard, when I stumbled into a clearing and found a building just 50 feet ahead, my heart stopped. If we were caught, the cryptid would be killed, and I would rot away in some godforsaken cell beneath Cheyenne Mountain. I turned around and faced the lumbering creature. "Stop right there and shut your mouth," I screamed out of pure impulse. Yes, I know it was a stupid thing to do. But heaven help me, it worked. He came to a sudden stop, then stared at me, mouth agape. "Good boy, here you go," I whispered, pulling a red gummy bear from the bag in my pocket and tossing it into the sky. He opened his mouth greedily, but to no avail. The gummy bear bounced off of his forehead and fell to the ground. He quickly dove into the dirt and slurped it up, chewing in loud smacking noises. I turned back around in an attempt to find a way past the compound, and that's when my blood froze mid-beat. Greg was standing idly by himself, staring aimlessly at the sky above, waiting for me, just like they said he would be. Shit. My mind began to race, with only my heartbeat going faster. A plan formulated in my head, seemingly of its own accord. I would have to tranquilize the cryptid, not my first choice, but by far the least of all evils, and then hunker down in the bushes. I could spend the time wondering what the SM engraved on the gun might mean. I'd move out to get Greg's attention, just as the sun was setting, which looked to be about 2 hours away. We'd write up the report, and I'd sneak out to evacuate my fluffy friend back to the wilderness. The lack of a body would be problematic, though, but it was a big ENRP, and it would be believable enough to say I simply lost him in the woods. Plus the fact that I'd been abandoned by everyone, with hardly any equipment, I might add, it would be an easy enough sell. Swallowing my nausea would be the biggest challenge in offering the don't blame me, I'm just a girl argument. But I'd done it plenty of times before. Men can be fooled. The cryptid was now sniffing furiously around the forest floor, sounding like the world's biggest bloodhound as he desperately tried to draw a scent through the tiny slits that made up his nose. Quietly, I withdrew the tranquilizer gun from my pocket, and as I did so, the edge of the gummy bear packet peeked out as well. The cryptid then shouted, and the sound echoed off the building. Then he sprinted towards me. It was loud, and especially more so when he accidentally kicked a tree from the ground in his excitement. I groaned and turned around. Yeah, Greg had noticed. He started running toward me as well. I stood frozen in the middle as two large beasts ran into a collision course. "Give me the damn rifle, Lisa," he screamed. "I told them they shouldn't have trusted you with it." Time teetered on edge as I immediately understood what was about to happen. I had maybe 3 seconds until both of them smashed into me. The rifle wasn't going to do me any favors, so I spun around and flung it into the bushes behind my back. Then I pulled the tranquilizer pistol out and pointed it at my new friend before turning to block Greg. Hopefully, I could subdue the cryptid quickly enough to convince my boss that killing him was unnecessary. I held out my hand and yelled at Greg to stop. He did not stop. Instead, he reached for the tranquilizer gun as the two of us smacked into each other. Hard. Pain stars in my eyes. The taste of copper. One hand shoving my face into the ground. The other trying to rip my fingers off, heaving, grunting, instinctively trying to clutch the tranquilizer pistol as it was angrily pulled from my grip. I yelled, tried to shake him off of me, failed, and made one last desperate grab as the gun began to slide away from me. He then slammed my hand hard against the ground. Greg rolled off of me, clutching his head. Gasping for breath, my heart threatening to break my ribs, I got to my knees and looked across at Greg. He was sitting upright, a vacant look clouding his face. A large, angry dart, filled with enough sedatives to kill Ozzy Osbourne, was sticking out of my boss's temple. For a moment, the world stopped spinning. The intense wrongness of the situation crystallized into that instant. In that instant, burning my memory with the indelible sight of his suffering. "No, no, 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 no," I screamed, lunging at him. I reached my hand forward, feeling my fingers wrap around the dart mid-leap, and I pulled. There was resistance as the needle popped out of his skin, but it emerged intact. I collided with Greg's chest, and we fell to the ground, and for half a second, I didn't move. I dreaded the sight of what lay before me. I didn't want to look, but I knew I had to look. I slowly pressed on the ground, lifting myself up so that I could gaze down at Greg's injury. He was immobile. The only sign of life in my boss was the blood that poured steadily from his temple. I looked down, shaking, to see that his blood was all over my hands. I didn't actually want to kill Greg, no. Active hatred is difficult for me to harvest. No one can make immoral decisions unless there's something good within them that they have chosen to overlook. Besides, creating hatred means splitting your soul and hiding part of it. Honestly, I just wanted Greg to go away. but not like this. I don't even know if I was screaming as I shook his frame, begging him to wake up, convinced that his entire life had been snuffed out by a stupid fight. I checked his mouth for respiration. He moaned. I know I screamed that time. I had fallen flat on my ass as he was sitting up, but when I had finally quieted myself and focused on my injured boss, I didn't understand what I was seeing. He was smiling. It was a vacant, creepy sort of expression that hinted his mind was even more absent than usual. He glared at me and parted his lips even wider. His teeth were rimmed with blood. A chill ran up my spine and then back down again. The lengthening shadows and crisp coolness of the air did nothing to stave off the impeding shivers. Greg? Greg, are you okay? I asked softly. His empty stare locked on me as drool began to slide down the corner of his mouth. I understood all at once. I had pulled the tranquilizer dart out of his head almost immediately, but enough must have seeped into his temple to produce a reaction. Greg's head fell bizarrely to the side, though his eyes remained fixed on me. What options did I have? I couldn't leave him to die, but my superiors were going to be very curious about the sudden onset of apparent brain damage in Greg. And there was, of course, the issue of the 7-foot beast that had followed me out of the forest. The whole situation was going to be quite awkward. And then I heard the cryptid's voice come rumbling from behind me. I was nearly bowled over as the cryptid brushed clumsily past. And to my horror, he reached out for Greg. Before I could do anything, he had laid a great hairy paw upon Greg's head and carefully lifted his skull from its crooked position. My heart stopped as I saw him reaching for Greg's jaw. Regardless of his intentions, he could rip Greg in half without even realizing it. But my fears were put to rest when I saw the cryptid pull his arm up and slam a red gummy bear inside of Greg's drooling mouth. I started to suppress a laugh. I don't think he can chew right now. I stopped when the cryptid grabbed Greg's jaw and began mashing his own teeth together, gently causing him to chew up the gummy bear. My hairy friend did not seem at all bothered by the resultant stream of drool that cascaded down upon his arm. When the cryptid was satisfied with Greg's mastication, he tilted the man's head back. Greg gulped involuntarily and then dropped his jaw once more as the cryptid released it, and Greg smiled. He then scooped the man up in his great arms and buried his face into Greg's chest, wrapping him tight as could be while twisting back and forth. Greg's limbs danced freely, but he offered no resistance. Greg had become a doll. Then the cryptid jumped up and down with excitement. He shook the trees and caused the ground to tremble. "Whoa there, boy. I think we need to get everyone out of here before someone starts asking me some very awkward questions," I said. I had taken two steps away before I turned back toward the bushes. "I do not want to leave this here," I said mostly to myself as I plucked the rifle from the branches. "There's already more than enough incriminating evidence lying around as it is." It was hard to get the cryptid moving at first, what with his new toy and all. But my gummy bears eventually won him over when he realized that Greg wouldn't eat pine cones. And we were once again racing through the forest as the sun truly began to set. I came to a halt as I recognized the hidden edge of the ENRP. An occluded barrier ran cleverly underneath the foliage. It emitted pheromones, subsonic and supersonic pulses, and random magnetic fields that were designed to keep out the wildlife. There was also a fence hidden underneath the leaves as a final stopgap to anyone who didn't get the message. To clarify, the fence was for humans. Only humans needed that many hints to understand. But the far western corner of the barrier stopped just before it met the wall of the compound. That gap allowed Interior Department employees more complete access to the grounds, and security concerns were offset by the hidden cameras stationed at regular intervals around the wall. I really hoped that I remembered the exact location of every camera. I could feel my own pulse in my ears as I very slowly and very carefully snuck my way along the edge of the wall. The cryptid, for the most part, seemed to pick up on my body language. Not for the first time, I wondered just how much of our behavior animals truly understood, and how intelligent it would prove them to be if they had been faking ignorance since the break of civilization. Inch by inch, we picked our way along the edge of the wall. The cryptid followed my lead, dragging Greg's limp body across the grass. past the hidden border, out into the wild. It didn't seem that we had been picked up by the camera, because no MP or interior guys were waiting to meet us. I breathed easy. The cryptid continued to take several steps after I had stopped. He continued walking until he was 20 feet ahead of me. But at 20 feet 1 inch, he stopped. Turning around slowly, he looked at me in alarmed confusion. Greg still dangled placidly from his arms, and he seemed greatly content in his place. "You go on," I commanded. I didn't realize how hard things were going to be until I heard the hitch in my own breath. "And take Greg with you. They would just subject him to a lifetime of medical experiments here anyways." The first involuntary tear began to fall. "I can tell that you love him, and I think he needs that in his life." Greg just continued to smile emptily. I don't have any proof that the poor cryptid understood even the slightest amount of what I was communicating, but I knew, and he knew it too. He looked at me and paused, and I shook my head adamantly. "You need to get out of here now. That's it. Vamoos. Goodbye." His enormous black eyes began to glisten. The teeth of his underbite trembled, and his lower lip started vibrating quickly. I finally lost it when he took a solitary step in my direction. "Stop it. You need to get away from here now," I was screaming at him. "They could still be coming for us. I just set you free. Go. Don't wait." He slackened his arms, holding them wide like he wanted to give me a hug. In that moment, his raw innocence was set on display with all the blatancy of a splayed corpse at the deli counter. But I saw red. "That is the kind of stupid innocence that will get you killed," I shrieked at him. He remained in place, clearly confused. Then he took another step in my direction. It was too much. I picked up a rock from the ground and hurled it at him. He immediately stopped when the rock careened into his soft, fuzzy stomach. But it was his spirit that I'd hurt, not his belly, and he stopped that in his tracks. My rage then boiled over. I flung another stone at his right shoulder, then a different at his left. When he continued to stare at me in hurt confusion, I took aim at his forehead and fired. Some distant part of me wanted the rock to miss, because I couldn't bear the thought of watching him suffer. That distant part was disappointed, though. I heard a crack. The rock to his forehead halted his advance, rooting him firmly to his spot. The cryptid's own tears were flowing freely now. A look of the most profound betrayal was carved into his enormous, innocent face. "Run away," I screamed before wiping my eyes on the sleeves of my shirt. He let me be still for a moment. Then the cryptid extended his paw in my direction. He was offering me the last of his red gummy bears. I understood in that moment just how powerful his innocence was and how difficult it would be to break it. Even if he escaped today, there had been too much of a ruckus to keep him hidden from the government, which would be searching for him. He would never, ever again be safe in the wild. And life in captivity would be hell for a creature that did not understand distrust. I nodded to myself with confidence, but every twinge caused me pain that was both physical and metaphysical. Numbly, I lifted the rifle and loaded it. The bolt snapped into place with a grim finality. "I'm sorry," was all I could muster. I raised the rifle, aimed, and pulled the trigger. The bullet ripped past the cryptid's right ear, spraying blood into the air as it tore the edge of his tender flesh. He screamed, dropping Greg and curling into a fetal position. He rocked back and forth as blood ran across his soft paws that pressed hard against his damaged ear. I loaded the gun again. My fingers worked by feel, as my vision had become blurry. After snapping the bolt into place, I wiped my eyes and looked down at the cryptid once more. Tears were tumbling down his face like tiny waterfalls. His mouth was open, and his breaths came in agonized, ragged sobs. The pointy teeth, which had once appeared so large and imposing, suddenly seemed very small. He trembled as he looked at me once more. The cryptid instinctively raised his left arm in a protective stance as he flinched, but the right one reached out toward me. He was offering the final gummy bears as a truce. "You're not getting it," I screamed. I raised the rifle and aimed it at its head. "Do you want another bullet?" He yelled back, dropping his last gummy bear as he used both arms to brace himself. I aimed near his head and fired again. The bullet came within inches of his other ear. and this time he took the hint. The cryptid sprang to his feet and began to run away from me, and then he stopped and turned around. He sprinted back to where he had just laid, scooped up Greg, tucked him under his arm, and once again ran away in complete terror. And he never looked back. "Learn to be afraid of us," I blubbered to myself before sitting down on the grass and dropping the gun. The sun was starting its final descent now. Its orange and gold light illuminated the lush green landscape in a warm glow. And I remembered the root beer float. It was just wrong, all wrong. I dropped my head into my hands and let the tears flow unabated. "Be afraid of us. It's the only way to live." A heaving sob racked my body. "You need to leave us all alone. Completely alone, because humans will destroy the world." I walked, zombie-like, toward the compound's doors. Every tear had been wrung from my face like water from a well-twisted sponge. Barely aware of the rifle in my hand, I trudged on with a vague notion that things couldn't get worse. And that's when the Jeep came screeching towards my direction, spraying dirt and gravel as it slid to a halt. The mustachioed man was staring at me, eyes blazing with emotion. "Get in," he demanded. After surrendering the rifle, I was marched deep into the compound. A small group of men escorted me through three different security doors before depositing me into an opulent office. They shut me inside by myself, and I collapsed into a chair. "Do criminals from Cheyenne Mountain get sent to normal federal prison?" I doubted it. The bowels of this particular military installation went quite deep, and I'm sure it contained secrets that everyone was better off not knowing. I don't think I'd ever felt more alone. I was distantly wondering whether the tears might make a reappearance after all when the mustachioed man walked through the door and rested in the chair opposite me. "Stay seated," he commanded crisply. "Just watch." Here he snatched up a remote control and switched on a monitor that had been hidden in the wall. An image sprang to life that caused my stomach to melt deep into my colon. That's how I found out I didn't know where every exterior camera had been hidden. The footage clearly showed the cryptid wandering idly forward, Greg dangling loosely at his side. My form couldn't be seen, but I could tell from the angle that I must have been just out of sight. My eyes began to burn as I saw the cryptid turn around, then take a tentative step toward me. While no audio was available, I could clearly recall every word that I hurled his way, every insult that I could muster, every tear that I shed. I didn't want to watch, but I couldn't turn away when I saw the first bullet hit his ear. The second one seemed so angry as it caused a wave of dirt to explode by his head. The image then showed him getting up to run away before turning back to pick up Greg. The two disappeared off screen and the footage then cut out. What was there left for me to do? I disobeyed orders, shot my boss, helped the cryptid escape, and allowed Greg to be lost to the forest. I sincerely doubted that I'd end up amongst a zany crew of misunderstood prisoners. No, I figured I was much more likely to find myself on the business end of an alien probing stick for a decision of this magnitude. The man cleared his throat. "I don't know if we've been properly introduced. I'm Captain Reed, Special Liaison for Interdepartmental Cooperation. What I saw on the monitor was just appalling." I tried to think of something courageous to say, but for the life of me, not a single word came out of my mouth. "That must have been very frightening for a woman," he continued. "The fact that this cryptid was able to overpower, abscond with, and undoubtedly kill your immediate supervisor indicates that it is far more dangerous than our previous intelligence had indicated. Its resistance to H&H bullets indicates that it is far stronger than previously believed. Your attempts to save your boss, then stand your ground after driving the beast away, indicate that you are much tougher metal than we had previously understood as well." I had no idea what he was talking about, so I remained very silent. "Several of us looked over the various reports on your performance that had been filed throughout the years. When we actually sat down to read them, they painted a much different picture of you than the one we had gotten from Greg." He then nodded confidently to himself. And we passed a very long, very quiet moment together. It was quite tense. Well, he quipped, not just breaking the silence, but absolutely shattering it. You'll have noticed that there is a sudden vacancy in the head office of Doibo. I've been in talks with Secretary Zinke's people, and they think you're the right man for the job. My head was spinning. With so many questions that I wanted answered, it seemed impossible to get everything out at once. So I chose one at random. You've already talked to the Interior Secretary's office in the incredibly short time since I shot? I mean, since all this happened? Captain Reed eyed me suspiciously. Well, certainly you must realize how quickly things happen when there's motivation to enact change. The hair on my neck stood up, and nearly every other question died in my throat. I had a feeling that the next words I said would be very important. I took a deep breath. So, I led with the most authoritative voice I could muster. Then you'll understand that I need an increase in Doibo's budget for tracking rogue cryptids. And we stared at each other. Within an hour, I had redecorated Greg's office and threw out all of his stuff. It took 3 bottles of hand sanitizer to get rid of everything. I plan to keep a close eye on all local cryptid reports. My plan is to shoot every one of them on sight. There doesn't seem to be the budget for any more bullets, so tracking devices will have to be a worthwhile substitute. That's just the first part of my plan for the future of Doibo. And while I like my office here in the Hayes Fillmore wing of the Cheyenne Mountain Satellite Compound, I fully intend to spend most of my workday outdoors. Before leaving that night, Captain Reed came by my new office, and he looked impressed. "Good to see you, Captain," I announced sharply, bringing his attention to me. "Shall we get started? I am ready to begin my new job."